At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
If you thought the Koberger case was going to slow down and before the trial, you're completely wrong, because it's getting messier and messier. This week, we're diving into DNA under the fingernails, the defense's latest legal maneuvers, and an argument that Koberger's autism should keep him off death row, and a 911 call and the text between the surviving roommates. A lot is dropping, and there's likely to be a lot more now that the judge has said, we gotta unseal a lot of this stuff. If that sounds like a legal circus, it is. But the big question here is, does the defense have a real shot at tearing down the prosecution's case, or are they just throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks? Here to help us break it all down, Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. Bob, let's start with the fingernail DNA under Madison Mogan's nails. Contained a three-person mixture, and terms are important here. Because the defense is trying to push out into the ether of the potential jury pool that it's not a match. True, but he's not excluded either.
Right.
And that's a huge difference. It's just like lying by omission when they're making that sort of statement. And I get it. It's their job. They don't want to paint him as being possibly one of the DNA profiles under that fingernail. But it could be. It's not a definite no, and that's the difference. It's in the middle ground. Where do you think this goes? Is this something that could help the defense, or is this something that's going to help the prosecution long term?
Well, I mean, really what the defense is seeking at this point, if you read their motion in limine, is that they don't want the state during their case in chief to be able to throw that out there that it is inconclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, because that's what it really came
they don't
back
just to. Want the facts put out there, basically.
Right, like it's inconclusive, because any defense attorney will tell you that what that means to a juror is that it might be his.
Mm-hmm.
So they're claiming, look, we had our independent lab, like we had them look at the same 13.1, that piece of evidence, which is the
mm-hmm.
a sample that they found under her nails. And they're like, our lab said that he's excluded. So we've got this situation, but we don't get to put our case on till second. It's that case of, you know, you can't unring a bell because the state goes first. So if they go in and they put on their expert to say, well, you know, it's inconclusive, so thereby he cannot be excluded. The defense is arguing there's a delineation between those two terms. And we don't want them to be able to say either. Because, and they're talking about it's like a 0.001 to 100. There's a range there, you know, and they have to meet a certain threshold to be able to say certain things,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I mean, it's a fair argument from the defense.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it is, you know, because by the time they put their expert on and they've already had somebody on the stand saying it's inconclusive or he can't be excluded, the damage is done as far as the defense is concerned in terms of, look, all right, well, maybe it's his,
Then
when you compound it with the fact, like, to me, the defense is doing everything that they need to do, right?
Sure.
In a case like this, there was, like I was telling you before we came on, there was a litany of motions in limine. There is all kinds of stuff that they're filing for, and that's what motions in limine are.
Mm-hmm.
Bro. Motions in limine are typically filed right before trial or right in the beginning of trial about things that they don't think that should be said mm-hmm. or presented at trial. And most of the times it's things that they don't want them to be able to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a motion out there that they don't want when they're used, they don't want them to use, they being the state, to use the word murder, mm-hmm. murderer, or that murder weapon.
Or psychopath or sociopath.
In relation to Koberger.
Yeah.
That, you know, they could say that the girls were, you know, that these were homicides. Like, because it does, he's the guy sitting at the table.
Yeah.
When they keep saying, they don't want him to say, because you're like, we see it in every case.
Yeah.
You know, where the prosecutor's like, and that is your murderer, pointing at.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so they're, so point being, they're filing everything they can to try to mitigate as much as they can in terms of what's going to come in terms of trying to get this guy a fair trial. You know, I mean, none of this does anything to what I feel is obviously the most powerful piece of evidence, which is obviously the sheath.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like the only thing that is going to save them on that is if, in fact, yeah, we got a profile, but it's a really, really shitty profile. Meaning like we've got a match on like four loci.
Yeah.
Like it's like the profile they developed is so bad that CODIS wouldn't even be able to put it in their database because they have a threshold in terms of how many loci have to match before they're willing to put it into the database. It's got to be. Mm-hmm. And so like we don't know that information yet. That will come out at trial. So if it turns out to be a very powerful profile where they've got direct matches on all the loci that they need, it's incredibly powerful evidence. I know people like to sit there and say, oh, well, gee, the transferred DNA is really easily transferred. Well, that's true. But in terms of the sheath being found under one of the victims with his DNA and it's a single profile on the snap.
Yeah, where you would unbutton it with your thumb like that and it takes some force.
Or press it down when he put the knife in. It, like either way.
It takes some force, which is why you're going to have a really good good transfer there on something like that. Right. Is this something, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you have one side that says, look, he can't be eliminated. The other is saying, our expert says he can be. How does that read to a jury? And is it even a good idea to even allow this into trial for either side? Because I feel like, I mean, from a prosecution standpoint, if you're going to do that, it starts to create doubt about DNA in general. I mean, I granted, we're talking about two different areas. We're talking about the sheath and fingernails. But if you put it out there and you're presenting that, well, you have two experts here that have two totally different opinions, the jury's also going to look at the knife sheath and go, well, if that can be up in question, why could that not be up in question? And we know why, and we can understand that because we've been studying this and researching this forever. The jury hasn't. So I feel like this is why the words matter so much right now about what is going in and what's not going to be going into this trial.
Yeah, and it's a great question, and it's a tough question for Hippler to have to respond to in terms of what he's going to allow. You know, but I mean, it kind of is what it is with the evidence. It's all, again, it's a matter of they're going to be able to get the evidence in. He's not going to bar the evidence from coming in that there were three profiles. It's the terminology that he's going to allow those experts to use while they're on the stand, which is what the decision is going to be. It's exactly what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
What the, you know, am I going to allow them to say inconclusive, because inconclusive means not excluded in the minds of the jurors.
Yeah.
Like that, like that's entirely what Ann Taylor's argument is.
Mm-hmm.
She's like in that, and again, like the fact that the state goes first, it's very powerful because what it leaves you in your mind is exactly what you said in the beginning. It's like, well, I mean, they're not saying, I mean, it's him, but they're not saying it's not.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's powerful. It's powerful, even though it's not flat out saying, yeah, it's definitely his DNA under her nails. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how the judge kind of reconciles that.
Another,
you know, I have a feeling that just, well, you know what? You've got your expert. You're going to be able to put your expert on. And it goes to the weight, not admissibility of the word or the term they're going to use. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not going to limit them because it's accurate. It is inconclusive.
Yeah,
like
which, right.
You know, so I think that he'll probably say that, you know, that's why you have your expert. Your expert can get up there and your expert's going to say, look, you know, this is the testing. This is, we're going to show our work. This is the data. This is how we're proving to you. You know, if the defense was smart, they would have hired my DNA guy, Carl Reich. That guy explains DNA to people like they're 5 years old, and it's amazing.
Yeah,
because then you actually understand it,
and that's what's going to be like, needed. Yeah,
it, for real, because it goes exactly what you were saying. It's like if there's kind of from the state's perspective, if there's this battle over like, okay, well, like, can one side or the other be definitive about what this actually means? Does that erode the trust in DNA evidence altogether? And I think it's a strong argument because it might.
It shouldn't, but it might, because it's just about understanding and about what people are going to be able to absorb and you know, take out of that trial with the information that they're given. The other part here that just came in as of our recording, as more and more is being unsealed, roommates' text messages and the 911 call. We don't have the audio of the 911 call. We have the text of the 911 call. I'll be breaking all of that down in a longer piece, but let's talk about the text messages between the roommates that night, because that's quite interesting to see what exactly was going on. These are direct messages. I'm just going to use the initials on here. And I'm just going to go through this short little script of what was released. DM to BF, no one is answering. DM to BF, I'm really confused, RN. I'm going to say the words they're using a lot of, you know, initials for some of these things. Right. DM to Gonzalez, Kaylee. DM to Gonzalez, what's going on? And no response there. BF to DM. Yeah, dude, WTF. DM to BF to DM. And Xana was wearing all black. DM to BF, I'm freaking out, RN. DM to BF, it's not like scheme. It's like ski mask almost. BF to DM, STFU, shut the fuck up. BF to DM, actually. So this is the two roommates that are going back and forth while they realize something is going on in the house and they're scared. DM to BF, like he had something over his head and a little ND mouth. DM to BF, I'm not kidding. I am so freaked out. DM or a BF to DM. So am I. DM to BF, my phone is going to die. Fuck. BF to DM, come to my room. BF to DM, run. BF to DM, down here. That's a good chunk of what we've seen. We've seen a couple others where they're trying to communicate with the victims. They don't know that they're dead yet. Please answer. Are you up? Are you up? Those are to Gonzalez and Mogan. And there's some other text exchanges here as well that go on and on. But still no 911 call. And I know people get caught up on that one. And I'm just going to go with, and I'm not trying to insult them at all. I'm going to go with stupidity. I'm going to go with what everybody has at that age, young and dumb, because we've all been there. We've all been young and dumb. And this is a generation at that point in time where they think differently. 911 is a different thing to them than it was to us. And I think generationally, that's what needs to be taken into account here, is how they communicate and what is normal communication to them. At least that's my take. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. When I read it initially, and I found out about it, I was actually on a live with somebody else. I hadn't read them either. And he put them up on the screen and we're reading through them. And he's like, oh man, Xana's in black. Like, what the fuck does that mean? I'm like, all right, well, obviously either one of two things happened. Either Dylan had called Bethany prior to, like right before that text stream started, mm-hmm. with the first thing that you read, or there's more text messages that precede it. Mm-hmm. Because what, like, clearly at some point Dylan told Bethany either via a quick phone call or a text, like, oh my God, I just saw a fucking dude all in black walk by the room. And then, so I think Bethany is trying to like work it through in her mind. Like, all right, well, maybe this isn't a fucking nefarious, crazy fucking thing. Cause no one's like going to like somebody just snuck in and murdered all their roommates. Like, that's not where their brains are at. However, they're freaked out, you know? And then, like, I think while she's trying to work it through, she's like, oh, well, Xana had all black on tonight. Like, is it maybe that was just her walking, you know, that kind of thing, to try to like calm it down between the two of them. You know, so I mean, but when you look back at the probable cause affidavit and you saw this thing that I just could not get over, was the whole frozen shock phase thing that I think a cop wrote in there. I had said it then and I'll continue to say it now. I don't think Dylan ever said those words mm-hmm. that I was in frozen shock phase, because I think they knew at that point in time that there is going to be a problem in this case in terms of the crime scene mm-hmm. and the fact that the girls knew at that point. Now we know that they had the wherewithal. Nobody was in a frozen shock phase.
Yeah.
They certainly had the wherewithal. And it's not just one of them, because the question of whether or not Bethany is awake, we now know she was, mm-hmm. and that they were communicating, and that they tried to get a hold of their roommates and they weren't answering and they're scared. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to come to my room, run. Yeah. You know, it's like the concept, and I hear what you're saying, because I've got college age kids yeah. and like, it ain't what it used to be with the whole 911 thing. It's no. just that is facts, you know, but when you're in that circumstance, it also leads you to another possibility that it is a party house.
Yeah.
And they've had the cops over there on multiple occasions for various noise violations and other things.
Yeah.
And like, they're not, if they're worried about somebody has a sack of, say, Molly or MDMA or ecstasy pills or anything that's illegal, that a party house in a college town is more likely than not going to have some in. And it's no indictment on anybody.
Yeah. I mean,
kids at college party. And you're not going to instantly think, oh, I'm going to call the police and invite them into our house so they could start looking around.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's like a distinct, it's really the thing that makes the most sense to me, because then when the later texts that you're reading are in the morning, mm-hmm. so at some point they fall asleep after trying to get a hold of everybody in there. I can imagine them huddled in their bed. They pass out finally. And again, this is after a night, you know, Friday night partying.
Yeah.
Or Saturday night. I can't remember if it was a Friday or Saturday. I can't remember if it was even, it might have been in the week. I don't know what day it fell. Whatever the case yeah. was, they had all been out that night somewhere in mm-hmm. different places. Some were at a party, some went to bars. Again, it's college. I think it was a Friday, because I think there was a Vandals game either that day or it was either that night or the next day. I can't remember.
I don't have it. Yeah. If I knew exactly, I'd tell you.
Yeah. Remember. Like that part doesn't really yeah. matter. But the fact is that you've got the girls huddled down there. They pass out and they don't wake up until 10:30, 10:32. It's like the first text she sends out mm-hmm. texting to her roommates. Are you good? Are you okay? Are you awake yet?
Yeah.
And then we then know that obviously they start reaching out to other people, because when you look at those texts and that J, that's going to be the frat boy mm-hmm. that comes over. And when you see that little text, when you read it again, you'll see that he texts back. He's like, bro. So that's the moment in time when he discovers Xana.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you have this whole thing where, like, again, I'm trying to work this through in my brain in terms of how anybody would just think she was unconscious when we know
yeah.
the amount of blood that was involved with this. Like, nobody's thinking that,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Unless maybe she wasn't as brutally killed as mm-hmm. you know, the other people. And maybe it was,
well, like true. I mean, I'm going to guess these kids have not been around many dead bodies. Hopefully
probably I would imagine zero.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if it is pretty brutal, you still may be like, oh my God, can I help? You know, you don't know if you've never been in that situation, and they're kids.
And they're in a situation that no one on the planet would ever envision themselves being in
yeah.
in that moment in time. Like I would never presume to cast any kind of shade about how anybody would react in that situation, because I have no idea, because I've been fortunate enough never having been yeah. in that situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, but the one thing that we know is that there were a lot of people in that house before law enforcement got there.
Yes.
And that's like, that is the entire point why it matters that law enforcement would have been called as soon as they were fucking freaked out. Is because then that doesn't happen. The scene is going to be preserved immaculately. You know, now where you have a situation where, believe me when I tell you, Tony, the defense is going to use that to their advantage to pick apart this crime scene is completely being contaminated to where you can't trust anything that they've found, because there were people walking around in there that shouldn't have been in there, that were touching things, that were moving things. And you know, it's going to beg the question for these kids who I feel so terrible for, because they're going through it. Like, you, like, I mean, imagine the PTSD they must have.
God. Yeah.
You know, like all the things they're going through, like every kid that walked in that house after the fact and had to see what they saw. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you, like, it'll be something that'll be with them vividly in their minds for the rest of their lives. It'll be a moment in time that they'll never forget, and not in a good way. Yeah. You know, it's going to be a tragedy that's just etched in their minds forever. It'll, you know, it'll change kind of the fabric of who they are, like moving forward in life. It's like that profound. And so, you know, all of that being said, when these kids get on the stand and the defense starts grilling them about what they did in there, why were you in there for so long? What were you doing? When poor Dylan gets on the stand and Bethany gets on the stand and Ann Taylor is grilling them, why didn't you call 911? And you know what I'm saying? And it's like,
I don't know that that's going to go Ann Taylor's way very well. Like, she's going to have to be very careful on how she approaches that.
She will.
Yeah.
Like, she's not going to go at him like in anger.
Yeah, I hope
She'll go at him like, you have to make us understand, because you understand that what happened when you didn't call 911 is that a lot of people that should never have been in this crime scene, that would have really helped solve this crime, arrived there with a crime scene that had been tampered with, not even intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got, you guys, like, you didn't know. Maybe, or, you know, you would think common sense in this day and age that everybody be like, don't fucking touch anything, dude, because otherwise they're going to think you did it. You know what I mean?
But then again, you got to go back to, okay, we know 18, 19, 20-year-olds because we have kids and such, and common sense isn't necessarily a strong point for a lot of them at that age. Some have great amounts of it, but if you just look at them as a whole, it's kind of a crapshoot as to who's going to have much of it. Again, everybody's there. Everybody's young and dumb at some point in their life. It's just, it is what it is. It's not 100% to denigrate them at all. I'm not saying dumb like you're stupid. It's just experience-wise. You don't have it. You don't have the reps. And that
there's strength in numbers when you have that many kids that are all kind of like,
like,
oh my God, oh, what the fuck? Oh my, you know, well, like, it, all freaking out.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of, it would have been, you have to imagine a bunch of like 18, 19 year olds all coming upon this scene and just all like kind of losing their minds collectively.
Yeah.
Like, and if there's not that one person in there that's corralling everybody and saying, all right, we need to calm the fuck down and we need to get the fuck out of here right now.
Yeah.
And we got to call 911. Like, if that one person's not in the house with them, then you know what I mean? Which
I can't imagine. Like, yeah. I mean, I think our generation would have, like, 911 would have been our first thing. This is kind of how we were brought up and that's what it was. But the way that they communicate today, the way that everybody is, it's such a social, it's such a tight knit group, the way that this is handled. I'm not surprised that it went this way. And I'm not saying anything bad about it. I'm just not surprised that it went this way.
You make a great point.
And it's a college house too. And that's I loved your other point of, you're not exactly at that age trying to invite the police over for any reason whatsoever.
Zero chance.
Not at all. So if you don't, and I'm sure they're not thinking their four of their roommates are murdered in the room upstairs.
Not a chance.
They're just thinking, something's going on. Maybe there's a shitty person here, whatever. But I'm not going to call the cops because they're going to find something here that's illegal. And it's not worth it because it's not in their mind that there's four friends that are dead upstairs.
Not even for a second.
Yeah.
Like I never thought, like, depending on how long Dylan watches this guy, if she watches to the point where he walks out of the slider, at that point, she's like, all right, well, the fucking guy's gone.
Gone. Yep.
You know what I mean? And she's not like, and she's thinking, like, when they're not responding, that her roommates are sleeping.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, it's not going to enter your mind at that point in time, at that, like, in that college, in that state, you know, that somebody has just come in and massacred all of your roommates, but for one.
And you know, college like roommates, and college roommates are college roommates. They're not mom and dad, where mom and dad would be, let me make sure you're tucked in and safe. As parents, we're looking at it from that perspective of like, well, of course I'm going to go make sure they're okay. The roommates aren't. If they're drunk or drinking, and I'm sure it's a fairly common occurrence where these kids go back to their room and just pass out and nobody hears from them for a while. That's college life. That's how that works. That's pretty normal. And then to sleep until 10, if you've been out drinking and you think the problem is done and gone, you wouldn't realize. You wouldn't think to call 911 unless you walked out there. And if you're already kind of afraid, you go into bed, you think the guy's gone, game over.
Or you're running to your roommate's room and you're fucking huddling up in bed and then locking the door and be like, fuck that, let's, you know.
Yeah.
But I love your take on that, though, because it's so true. If you look back when we were young, when we didn't have the ability to be able to communicate instantaneously with a large group of people via text messages, where our only option in that type of situation would typically be to pick up the phone and call 911, because there is no
there's no other
for you where you can hit your people up and be like, what the fuck, what the fuck, you know what I mean? It's like, it's such a big point, and it's so true.
And that's like different times. Difference. It's a different time. It's a different, and it is how they communicate. It is what it is. And once you can understand that, it makes a lot more sense about those reactions. I'm very curious as to what else is going to be coming out here now that we've seen these. The digital footprint I want to see is Google searches. I want to see what the hell he bought. When that shit comes out, if there's a knife on that Amazon list, which we've heard from some folks with fairly reliable sources, we're not confirming it, but we've heard rumblings that there is on a list. I don't know. We got to wait till see when that happens, but I think it's game over if that's on a shopping list.
It's definitely game over. If you've got him buying the K-bar from wherever, and you've got the K-bar sheath. I told you, like right after the minute I saw that it was K-bar, I went online. I found the exact same sheath, complete with the Marine seal on the fucking sheath. I found the knife, came as a package deal right from K-bar, or you could get it on Amazon, wherever. It was like available all kinds of places. I mean, it begs the question, could this guy have been that fucking stupid or that bold to think that he wasn't going to get caught? I think it's probably the latter.
I think it's like both.
They're never going to get to me to the point where I need to worry about a knife that I bought 8 months prior in preparation for this.
It's ego. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's a lot of ego there, I think. And I think it's a little combination of both, quite honestly. It's inexperience and it's ego. And that's where you get and then add in the autism, add in the different way of thinking about things, the different way of how you process information.
The snow vision thing is a real thing, dude.
Yeah, I mean, like, all that stuff.
If you dig into his writings about how he was feeling.
Yeah.
Like, look, there is a presumption of innocence here.
Sure.
You and I are both huge on that.
Yeah.
I think both of us, you know, and I got challenged on it last night. They're like, oh, you're a defense attorney. I'm like, he's presumed innocent.
Yeah.
I just have I have a very good feeling that they got the right person on this one. Of course, that's got to be vetted at trial.
Yeah.
But on this one, much like Rex Huerman, I feel very secure that law enforcement got the right person. Like, there's just too many coincidences in this particular circumstance for him not to be the guy, in my estimation.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.